Today, is the Bitcoin rocket shooting for the moon? Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. Well, it's all hot news for Bitcoin at the moment, with the price of Bitcoins now above $82,000 and shooting higher. And so it's an interesting and important time to be considering what's going on. And we're very lucky today because Troy Harris has just written a book called Crypto, New Rich. And he joins me now. Troy, hello. Great to see you.
Hello, Martin. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, it's good to have you on, and perfect timing, you know, just after the US election, Bitcoin's shooting for the moon. And, you know, we've even had debates in recent days about should the US government actually hold some of its securities in Bitcoin as well. So now you've written this book, which is essentially a very penetrating analysis of what's been going on with Bitcoin and crypto generally, but Bitcoin in particular. But more importantly, it's about wealth generation, and it's about seeing how this plays into the broader canvas. So let's go through this. My first point, though, is some people are pretty skeptical of why Bitcoin actually should be spoken about at all. So why is Bitcoin important?
The million-dollar question, right? So I've seen this explained many different ways, but probably one of the best ways that I like to say is that at the end of the day, this is it's been described as lots of different things, but I think without a doubt, the hardest money that's ever been created. There's only 21 million Bitcoin in existence. There can never be any more. It's hard coded into the Bitcoin blockchain. That's basically one of the biggest things. I mean, we could go on and on about the technology. One of the really key points I believe, and I always say this, is that if you break it back down to very simple business economics, which is, you know, supply and demand, for example, right? If the supply for something stays the same and the demand for that product consistently increases, then, you know, you're going to probably have a pretty good product on your hand. And at the end of the day, and I've seen a lot of different things, obviously with your awesome channel as well, Martin. You know, at the end of the day, money is really just an agreement between two people that we both agree that it has a shared value, right? And I think that's the reason why Bitcoin is getting more and more exposure, because people are starting to really cotton on and be much more aware and much more in the conversations I have, just much more in tune with the government spending and the irresponsible government spending. And, you know, we can go down that rabbit hole, but I think that's one of the big reasons why it's really catching on as a key asset.
Right. So limited supply, of course, fully digital, which means that it has some inbuilt security attached to it. It's also relatively anonymous relative to some other, you know, ways of transacting, although, of course, transactions can be seen on the ledger. But why is it then that so many people, and even Gary Gensler on the SEC, has been talking about scams and risks and all of those things? And I know Bitcoin's been volatile, but why all the association with scams?
Look, I think it's like anything, and I hear this all the time. I've spoken all around the world on different stages to different people, different audiences, and a lot of people ask me this same question, like why the scam part? And I simply say scam, in essence, has been around for hundreds of years, right? Now, whether it was before the Bitcoin revolution took over in 2009, just 15 years ago, but before that, there was phone scams. I mean, a great example is if you've ever watched Wolf of Wall Street, right? One of the biggest scams that were ever run was portrayed on the silver screen. So, I mean, scams have been around for a long, long time. And I think what has really happened and has been much more awakening in the last 15 years is that with the exposure of social media and with the exposure of just media at our fingertips and being able to get information straight away, we're kind of exposed to, oh, this happened, that scam happened. And at the end of the day, though, as I said, scams have been happening for hundreds of years. It's just the nefarious characters attacking a new technology and exploiting people quite simply because they're not aware of it, right? They're not aware, the same way that if you watch The Wolf of Wall Street, where he exploited investors who weren't aware, and it took advantage of them with penny stocks, right? So it's the same thing. It's just a new world. And I just think with everything, technology, it gives us information at our fingertips within seconds, so something can spread like wildfire. And I think that's just nature of the business.
Yeah, and I've got the perspective here that we seem to be associating the general characteristics of capitalism specifically to Bitcoin, which is right. But of course, other financial systems have some of the same flaws too. So it's not like all scams are Bitcoin related, and maybe it's part of the, evolution because it's quite early days. But some of the biggest financial scams have been, from our major banks. And look at the
Absolutely.
2007 financial crisis. Look at the amount of debt printing that has been going on, which effectively is devaluing all of our normal currencies. And, one of the attractive points, I think, about Bitcoin is that finite supply, which means that it doesn't have the same abilities to be effectively devalued and devalued and devalued over time, which explains, of course, as the supply-demand curve drives and the price drives higher. Now, in your book, you talk about the five steps, in the crypto new rich, right? So take me through those steps. So, what are the things that you've covered, and what are the important messages you want to get across?
Probably the most important thing I want to get across is, and the book covers, whereas a lot of Bitcoin books that have been released, they cover more so around, I guess you could say, the technology side. And I feel that that had already been covered in so many different books. I mean, there's tons of different Bitcoin books. I think I've nearly read all of them, from a technology standpoint, and how revolutionary the technology is, especially around blockchain technology and so on. So I wanted to really try and concentrate on how investors can actually profit, and use this space as an investment tool and actually use it as a hedge against the fiat system. And that was what I really tried to concentrate on. And within the book, I talk about things, and one of the most, I guess, poignant things I talk about is the market cycle and how Bitcoin has been going through this 4-year cycle. And we see this trend happening. We've seen it happen where Bitcoin's hit a high of nearly $1,000 at the end of 2013, nearly $20,000 at the end of 2017. It reached a peak of around about $69,000 at the end of 2021. And now, as it stands as we speak, as you just showed on your screen before, it's sitting at around $82,000 as we speak, right? And who knows what the next 12 months is going to hold. So 2021 was the last all-time high. So if we fast forward 4 years, we now are looking at the end of 2025. So I try to share within the book the ways that people can kind of really, I guess, as I said, take advantage of this incredible new technology. And out of all the cryptos, I would say that Bitcoin is my favorite crypto. There's no doubt about that. And I think it's the ultimate hedge that you can have against the, as we call it, corrupt fiat system. But I try to give exposure to people to different cryptos as well, because what's truly worked for me over the previous 4-year cycles, and I've been through two of them now, I entered the market in 2016. What's really worked for me was hedging into other cryptos and then going back into Bitcoin after the high, and having more Bitcoin than what I had in the previous cycle. So hedging into cryptos that have done more of a multiplication than what Bitcoin has done. And I mean, just an example of this is, one example we did in the 2017 market was Ethereum. An example that we did of this in the 2021 bull market was Solana. And I mean, it's up for debate, the different ones that could potentially do this next year in the next 4-year cycle. But that's a prime example of how you can hedge into different other cryptocurrencies. I mean, there's thousands of them out there. And I try to give people an idea of the things to look for, the narratives that are going on, and just the different things to look at. So you can hedge into that market and then come back after that high with more Bitcoin than what you had in the previous cycle. It's about multiplying that over a long term and trying to really
delve into and let people be aware of that this is a long-term investment play, and it's about accumulating the most amount of Bitcoin. And I kind of say he who has the most Bitcoin at the end will win, I believe.
And I guess that means that you don't really see selling Bitcoin as a critical part of the strategy, right? It sounds to me as though you're accumulating
Totally.
Bitcoin, playing with other cryptos around the edge, but the idea is to build the Bitcoin portfolio up so as you ride the rise in value. It won't be linear, right? So the chances are we're going to see, as you say, through the 4-year cycle, ups and downs. But over the longer term, it's only one way.
Look, exactly right. And there's a saying in the Bitcoin and crypto community, and you probably heard the saying before about stacking sats, which is essentially stacking Satoshis, which is the decimal of Bitcoin. So one big thing, if anyone is watching this and may not know about the basics of Bitcoin, people often say to me, and you'd be surprised the amount of times that people have said this to me, Martin, whether it's in person, after talking on stage or after a webinar, whatever it may be, Troy, I can't afford 70, 80,000 US dollars for a Bitcoin. How can I even do this? And a big thing that people need to know is that you can essentially dollar cost average into this. I talk about it in the book about feeding the beast, also known as dollar cost averaging, feeding that beast and building up your sats. So we call it stacking sats or stacking Satoshis. And ultimately, as I said, I believe in the future it's going to be, he who has the most Bitcoin is going to ultimately win at this.
So one of the interesting developments in the last couple of years has been the intrusion or the entering of the big financial players into the world of Bitcoin. You've got now spot ETFs, and of course, that's been quite positive for Bitcoin. Quite a few of those big players are now offering Bitcoin and other crypto as part of a investment strategy. So one of the questions, I guess, is, can people do this for themselves, or do they need to go via one of these larger institutions to be able to make this play work?
Look, I personally feel that the spot ETFs are positive for, I guess you could say, Bitcoin pricing, but absolutely not essential. It's not something that I believe was really required or needed within the space. I believe that it would have had a natural progression anyway. Saying all that, obviously, when you've got companies like BlackRock, Fidelity, all these huge institutional funds investing in it, it's going to bode well for the name of Bitcoin, right? My personal take on it, and what I always advise, and you probably hear plenty of Bitcoiners say this to you, self-custody is key here. I believe self-custody is absolutely key. And if I, without a doubt, have a choice between the two, and I was suggesting it and talking to someone about it, without a doubt, in all my education, I always say self-custody. So getting yourself a hardware wallet, getting yourself your actual private keys on your Trezor or your Ledger or whatever your hardware wallet may be, is, in my opinion, a much safer way of doing it, as opposed to the ETF method that you spoke about, where essentially it's not self-custody, you're not holding your coins. We have a big saying in the crypto space, not your keys, not your coins, and that essentially means you want to be having self-custody of your coins. If you've got the opportunity to hold your coins in a safe and secure way, why not do it, right? Why not do it? It's incredibly difficult to do it in the past in regards to gold and silver and things like that because it's a physical object, but you can hold thousands of Bitcoin, thousands of different cryptos on these hardware wallets. So in my opinion, and my advice would always be to look at the self-custody side of it as opposed to the ETF side.
And that's a really important point, right? Because if you are actually accumulating Bitcoin, you don't really want to keep it all on a live ledger. What you want to do is basically put it in somewhere much more secure that you own and control. And then if you need to move it back, you can. I do find that quite a few people that I speak with think of it, I guess, the Bitcoin ledger like a bank account, and sort of think about it in the same way. So I just leave it sitting there and it'll be fine. Well, the online sort of world is not quite like that, is it?
Exactly right. So once again, this comes into the part of the nefarious characters, right? So I think a lot of people, not just of the older generation, but all generations have been caught out potentially with something online, right? So the explosion of Bitcoin has kind of gone hand in hand, I guess you could say, with the popularity of the internet, right? So there's a lot of people, probably you and I included, Martin, and we didn't grow up with the internet. I remember the internet being in my high school library and it was dial up, right? And you used to press the button at the beginning of recess and duck out and then come back at the end of recess and the page might have loaded. So when I say those kinds of things to my children, they're bewildered. They're like, "What on earth are you talking about?" And I think that scam side has gone hand in hand with the explosion of the internet and this new online world and around safety and security. And this is something that I'm massive on. I really like to teach and educate my community about this, that even simple things like the computer that you have, that you operate and do all your crypto on, whether it be having a hardware wallet to it or whether you might have a any kind of a attachment to an exchange or whatever, try and have a separate computer than what you use for your everyday use. I mean, and if you can't do that, then there's little things that you can do in regards to security, like having a secure email. Use simple things like using a secure email address, like a Proton mail address, for all your crypto related services. You'll be surprised the amount of people that join and they're all excited and they sign up to an exchange and they use their Gmail or their Hotmail email that they've been using for the last 20 years. And goodness knows how many times that email address has been compromised, right? So another big one is just simply don't use the same password. You'd be surprised, or maybe you're not surprised, Martin, about the amount of people that use the exact same password for everything they do, including their cryptocurrency wallet. So, just little things like that, and just trying to be ahead of this. I don't like to say crazy new world, but amazing new world that we're entering, because without a doubt, it's only going to get more digital from this point. All right. It's certainly not going to become less digital, that's for sure.
Yes, and I would say that two-factor authentication and those sorts of things are pretty important as well to make sure that you've actually, up your game with regard to security. So the expectation is that Bitcoin is going to continue. It's going to be, up to the right. We're not quite sure how far or how fast, but up to the right. I guess there's another interesting factor to bear in mind. Central banks are talking about a central bank digital currency, and there are a number of central bank organizations around the world who are actively piloting central bank digital currency, and quite a few of them are very, very critical of Bitcoin. So how do you see the interplay between Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies and central bank digital currency, and who do you think is going to win out?
Well, I must say, certainly straight off the bat, Martin, I'm certainly not surprised that the players are very critical of Bitcoin, these organizations, I like to call them, who are trying to bring in central bank digital currencies. And what I will say to your audience, Martin, if there's anyone that isn't aware of a central bank digital currency or a CBDC, as they're called, absolutely find out about it. Go Google it. Understand just how I like to say evil. This these the potential of these currency currencies are the ability to be able to, for example, if you go to the wrong political rally, or you might write the wrong thing on your social media account, to give the government control over your money like that, to me is just mind-boggling stupid. I don't know why anyone would do something like that, but as we both know, there's a lot of people just flowing through life and not understanding the consequences of this. But a central bank digital currency, I cannot think of a worse future for my children. And I'll absolutely do everything I can with every breath in my body to ensure that the decentralized world wins over the centralized world, which essentially is being led by Bitcoin. Having a decentralized digital currency like Bitcoin that's not owned by any government entity, not owned by any organization, not owned by any government or any person or any corporation. If you send the wrong if you send Bitcoin to the wrong address, you can't ring the CEO of Bitcoin or the Bitcoin helpline and ask for a refund, right? We can't just go magically printing more Bitcoin. And this is what I really love about the decentralized space. It really brings the onus back onto the user, right? We're all adults here. We're all, capable adults that I believe that should be able to have full control and full custody of our money. and a central bank digital currency or a CBDC is in direct conflict of that. And therefore, my stance on it, you probably won't be surprised, is I'm absolutely opposed to it. But I'm also a realist at the same time. So look, I love cash, right? Cash is fantastic. Cash is king. I'll always love cash, and I'll probably use cash until the very last day that it exists. But I'm a realist, right? So I understand that that cash is eventually going to disappear. That's from a paper-based world. We're moving into a digital world. But as we move into that digital world, I will much prefer, and I will definitely, most definitely be using the decentralized part of it. And I think this where, and we probably won't go down this rabbit hole today, Martin, but I think this is where we'll start to see much more of an explosion in the Web 3.0 space. I kind of feel like there's going to be, in effect, two different types of internet that are going to be out. We're going to have a Web 3.0 decentralized internet that we can access and that we can do and that us free thinkers can use. And then you're going to have kind of like an internet 2.5 that the people who are happy to be controlled by the CBDC is going to use. And that's the kind of theory that I've been seeing kind of play out and what I feel is going to kind of happen into the future.
Interesting. And, you know, you can only just look at Albo's misinformation, disinformation bill, which is, of course, is currently, you know, gone through the lower house and is now sitting in the Senate, and they had hearings today. In fact, more and more people were more and more concerned about this censorship and, again, centralized control. You could also look, I guess, to the access controls for people under 16, you know, to social media, all of those things. So there is actually one state of mind that says we want to give up more and more freedom to effectively the states to determine what we can think, what we can do, how we can spend our money. And I put central bank digital currencies and social scores all in that same bucket. And then I think of an alternative future, which is essentially a decentralized where a future where individuals can take more control of their own financial future and, you know, take responsibility as well. And I actually think that's really an important point, because to my mind, one of the critical things about the Bitcoin world and you know, taking ownership of Bitcoin is you have to take responsibility of your own decisions, right? And you've got to actually, as you say, hold the offline wallet and those sorts of things. You can't just look to somebody else. You can't just look to the government to say, oh, well, they'll fix it. So it actually is going to separate sheep from goats, in my view. And I think you're absolutely right. Not everybody's going to want to come across. But the alternative, of course, is that we effectively let the state call the shots. Now, as we come to the end of the show, sorry, go on.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to quickly say, Martin, in regards to the CBDC, look, it might not be as doom and gloom for people from the decentralized world, because at least it opens people's eyes to digital currency. And then hopefully the sheep can see how bad it is and then come to the good side over with us.
Yeah, let's hope so. Well, as we come to the end of this conversation, you make the point that the four-year cycle will peak potentially by the end of 2025. So you're making a call, I think, that between now and the end of next year, we're going to see prices for Bitcoin rise even higher?
Look, once again, like any trader or investor, all we've got to go off is historical data. And historically, Bitcoin has historically been hitting these four-year tops. You know, it happened at the end of 2013, end of 2017, end of 2021, and the next four-year top now is at the end of 2025. And, you know, historically, that's all we've got to go off. And the beautiful thing about Bitcoin in the crypto space, there's no real need for hype in this space. You can just purely talk about facts, figures, and data, which is all I talk about, because the historical data speaks for itself. The historical data tells us of the projection of where it can potentially go. And, you know, we talk about the money printers. Sometimes I laugh and I say, long live the money printers, because as long as they keep printing money, Bitcoin's going to keep going up against it. It's going to keep going up against all your government-issued currency, whether it's the dollar, the Australian dollar, US dollar, yen, pound, euro, it doesn't matter. So in one way, we can have a bit of a laugh, Martin, and say, long live the money printers.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've seen the amount of debt in the system just rise and rise and rise, and I would expect more debt to be issued both in Australia and in the US in the weeks and months ahead. So by definition, that is going to devalue the you know, ordinary currencies. So if there is something which is a hedge against that, and people are thinking that gold is one of those hedges, well, in a way, many people will say that Bitcoin is digital gold because it effectively has many of the characteristics in terms of supply and also more convenience in terms of you don't have a lot of physical weight to worry about because you can all hold it digitally.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, one of the big parts is I always say to people, you know, if you want to travel the world, for example, it's a little difficult to carry around a bag of gold with you, right? It's probably going to cost a fair bit in baggage. Plus, I don't like your chances of being able to get it into different countries, but you can carry a substantial amount of wealth with you on a thumb drive, essentially, and travel anywhere in the world. Bitcoin is completely borderless, it's permissionless, it's the ultimate and hardest form of money that's ever been created. And that is why we're seeing the price of it reacting accordingly at the moment. And in my opinion, like what you say, Martin, yeah, we're going to get pullbacks. Yes, we never go, vertically up. But I mean, this thing is a runaway train. And as I said, as long as they keep printing money, there's only one direction because they're consistently devaluing their own currency. And you know, I believe now is as good a time as ever. The next 12 months are going to be, I think, a very, very good time if you're a Bitcoin or crypto holder, in my opinion.
Well, let's just put the book there up, Crypto New Rich. Troy, is it out yet? And how do people get hold of it?
Yes, it is out, and we have a Amazon link, and I'll pop that. Send that through to you, so you can pop it up there, probably on the YouTube or whatever. There is also cryptonewrich.com. You can go to and follow the links from there. But yeah, I'll get the links through for you, Martin, and thank you very much for sharing it. I appreciate it.
Excellent. Well, thank you for that. Very interesting conversation. Congratulations on the book. Very, very interesting points that you make there. And I think the timing of it could not be more perfect given what happened last week. So be interesting times ahead. And we'll put the links and things in the comments below. Thank you very much, Troy. Good to talk with you and good luck with the book.
Thank you very much, Martin. Thank you for having me.
Take care.